tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, step by step, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Mike. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that will make noise and that might and will distract others. Some suggestions for the meditation are to breathe out self and breathe in God. Is everybody ready? We're going to begin with the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, there should be cards in the pew ahead of you. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those whom are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. We ask that you keep your feet off the kneelers ahead of you. Remember, we're all guests here. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Owen to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. so it's kind of important to know what one is.
I thought I was going to have an easy time tonight. The term spiritual my name is Owen, I'm an alcoholic. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different ways and forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at least by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the differences long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Thank you.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn off. Tonight's speaker is PM. It's been a great experience so far, so let's give him a nice warm welcome.
Again, before we get going, a friend of mine, Rob, came up to me and his sponsee, Josh, a victim of this disease, and has passed away. And so, again, let's take a moment of silence and remember another fallen brother. And let us pray. Father, we come together in one body, and always your will, not ours, be done, but perhaps some of these folks can find a light and find their way to us, as you've equipped us with the tools to help the sick and suffering. We ask that you remove their suffering and their pain and their misery, and give them a gift of desperation that they may find their way here. And we ask that you watch over their families who suffer along with them. As always, your will, not ours, be done. And we ask this in your mighty name, Father. Amen. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders and let them pray over you in the name of God. And the prayer of the faith will save the sick, and the Lord will raise them up. If they have committed sins, they will be forgiven. Confess your sins to one another. Pray for one another that you may be healed. If anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. It's what we do here. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I hope that book didn't offend anyone, but I was reading it, as I always do, and it just seemed like a lot of what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we study our history, we borrow from that other book, a whole bunch of it. And before we get going, it seems to be awfully common now, especially in the industry I'm in, it seems to be that we're burying two a week. And some people might say, well, you know, it deserves them right. No, it doesn't. We're burying two a week, and most of them are under 30. A lot of them are under 25. Some of them are under 20. Who haven't even stretched out yet, haven't even tasted life. But this other thing that we deal with called addiction or alcoholism has them and won't let go. And it usually doesn't let go. In fact, that's why we have a daily reprieve contingent on our maintenance of our spiritual condition, a daily stay of execution, because it's always looking to get its finger in one of our belt loops. And I don't even know that day is going to happen when it shows up. And the only way I can combat that hinges on my relationship with God. And how do I get a relationship with God? Well, we have the 12 steps. And I was sharing with some folks the other day that if you think about it, there are many folks out there, I may have shared this list last week, who are grinding it out each week and have never been exposed to not only God, but a way to find God. And we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, or perhaps another 12-step fellowship, having ripped up not our own life, but others' lives, other lives. Our track record for most of us is deplorable. Whether it was Park Avenue or Park Bench, we were not good people out there. Maybe good in here, but our actions showed what we were. Doing all sorts of things. And daily compromising our own integrity, and sometimes the integrity of others to have them buy into our nonsense. And then we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's one treatment center or 50 treatment centers, with all sorts of stuff, because we all got our stuff. And then we're given this glorious path. We're given actually a leg up on most folks out there on how to get well quick. The first portion of my book says nothing about 90 meetings in 90 days. Somehow that has replaced God in the 12 steps. I don't know how that started, where it started, even why it started, and moreover, why we even allow that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Forgive me for getting on a soapbox. But we have a way to come into Alcoholics Anonymous through desperation, and then we have a way out of desperation. It's called the 12 steps in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the direct path to get a guy like me, a bum like me, to experience the glory of God and put that monster to bed a day at a time. And you know what we do with that? We play with it. We watch it. We cut corners. We cheat. We lie. We steal while we're sober. I can't worship two masters. I'm either going to love my God or not. I'm either going to love my AA or not. I'm either going to bury myself into the 12 steps and service to others in recovery. If I don't do that, I'm wavering. And if I'm wavering, guess who's winning? My addiction, because it loves wavering minds. It loves double-minded folks. It loves a little in, but I'm not really. Mary and I were talking about the absolutes, the four absolutes from the Oxford group: purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. That is the goal. And if I'm not willing to scratch and claw and chop wood and carry water to get to a place of purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love in all my affairs, I'm resting up for another drunk. And I'm not talking about that we're going to be, you know, perfect godly, but we will do godly things. And that's what our 12 steps promise us with all the mistakes I make, with all the mistakes we make. I'm either in or I'm not. And that when I'm in, I get to learn from the elders, those who walk before me. Over the past weekend, I was up in New Jersey, and I just shared this Monday night at a conference that Marion got asked to be the banquet speaker at this beautiful conference. And they knew, they found out I was going with her, and so they asked me to participate in the old-timers meeting. And now they consider 25 and up an old timer, and I'm here my big 28 years, and they were guys with 55 and 56 years sober. And they did this bagpipe march parade into the room. It was really incredible. It was hard to not be teary-eyed watching this. And they asked me to speak. It was a short little 10-minute deal. And a handful of old timers spoke. And I got up there, and I'm asking God, what am I supposed to say? I have men and women who paved the way for a guy like me. And I realize how grateful I am that I was given a gift of desperation in June of 1988, where those elders, and they were elders when I came in, I was 28, and a guy my age would be considered an old guy. But I was given immediate respect for the elders. Even if they would tell me, don't drink and go to meetings, they were there. They said, welcome, kid. This is Joe, that's Bill, that's Frank, whoever. Stay away from the girls. They knew AA wasn't a dating scene. I don't know if we can say that about a lot of our meetings nowadays. But they gave me clear-cut rules, and because of my desperation, they were the elders. They ran AA. I says, yep, I will. And I follow them around, and they took me into their nest. And I got to participate with these elders. So when I was first getting sober, and I was sleeping on my brother's couch, and I was sleeping in the same apartment with my brother, because the older brother, who was supposed to take care of your younger brothers, that's the way I was brought up, they were taking care of me, Mr. Big Shot, and my kid brother put me on his couch in this little apartment. And when he would go away for the weekends, he said, if you want to use my bed, that's fine, but I couldn't do that. I didn't earn that. So I slept on the couch a couple of times. I slept on the floor in this little studio apartment, and my brother never charged me rent, never asked money for food. He was just grateful his older brother was sober. And I never forget one time, it was a Sunday, and it was a rainy, kind of damp, ugly day. And I was headed to, I had gone to a morning meeting, and I was going right back to the same church for an evening meeting, St. Mary's Church on like 86th Street and 25th Avenue, if anyone knows Brooklyn. And I'm standing on Bay Parkway, and there's a little overhead, I'm underneath, and I'm kind of hunched against the wall, and the rain is coming down. It's just, no one's out. It's just one of those ugly days. And here comes my brother up the block. He was just coming out from the gym. And as he sees me standing on a corner alone in this ugly weather, his face turned white as a ghost. And he says, where are you going? He says, here he goes again, I'm sure. I said, I'm on my way to St. Mary's meeting. It's an 8 o'clock meeting. I'll be back, and then we'll order some pizza. And it was a relief that came over him. This is how we impact people with our addiction that we can quickly forget. Now, I was home from Minnesota, so I was over a year sober at the time. Well, no, just under a year sober. And yet still, the pains that I brought my kid brother were very much alive. In an instant, his face turned white as it goes. He says, what is he doing here? There's no one out in the rain. Uh-oh. Here we go again. And I made sure when I came back that night that the few dollars I had on me, I got some pizza and we sat down and had a little pizza and watched TV with my kid brother. And I did that more for him than for me. I eventually saved up enough money when I got my job and got my first apartment sober, a little studio apartment. And when I moved in there, there was nothing in there. And there wasn't a phone. It was just an empty apartment, barren. And here's what happened. I got some AA bumper stickers, first things first, and all those things, and I put them on the door. And I'm a Catholic, so I got a crucifix, put that above the door. And I had a Bible and a big book. And I don't know where I'm going to sleep yet, and people in AA, this is what they did. Someone showed up with a sleeping bag for me. Now, I was sharing the other night, I'm from Brooklyn, man. I don't know sleeping bags. I almost strangled myself trying to get in. But I climb into the sleeping bag, and I got Bible, big book, AA bumper stickers, I'm sober, I have a sponsor, I have a home group, I'm doing all this, I just got my job back, so I have some money coming in, I'm going to work sober, coming home sober, I'm showing up on time, I'm leaving on time, I got the crucifix above the door, and I slept in paradise that night. I didn't need the Hyatt Regency. I didn't need the St. Regis Hotel. I had a sleeping bag on Ovington Avenue in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. I think apartment 5D. That was my paradise. And when I woke up in the morning to go to work, I remember the night before. It was euphoric. My sponsor showed up with one of those futons. They used to be popular back in the day. They gave me a futon instead of a sleeping bag. And then someone gave me a black and white TV, and that broke. It was so old. And another AA showed up with another TV for me to use. And then I got this throw rug, this area rug for my grandparents. And then I forget what happened. There was a knock at the door, which kind of startled me because you had to buzz your way in. And there was just a knock at the door. I know my daddy probably paid off somebody so they wouldn't have to ring. But there was a knock at the door. I open up the door, and my old man's standing there with one of those boxes that you have all the dishes and saucers and cups in like we got today. A coffee pot. And I had our first cup of coffee together in my apartment with my old man. There's a guy who, when it was really, really bad, said to me, and he meant it, I will kill you, and I'll go to jail for this rather than having the drug dealers kill my son. I'll go to jail for that. That's where he was brought to. He was so banged up from my illness and my addiction that he'd rather do the job on me and go to jail for that than having some low-life drug dealer give me something, and then he had to come find me dead. That's what we do to people. This is a man who would literally take a bullet for me and my two brothers. But that's where he was brought to. Let me never, ever forget that kind of pain. Because here's what I found out. The wounds close. They heal, but the scars never go away. The scars are there. It was years into recovery where my dad stopped checking up on me. And my brothers stopped checking up on me. But yet, I've had a handful of surgeries over the years that required pain meds post-surgery, from knee operations and other things, staph infections, etc. And the very first thing my dad would ask me, did they give you pills? His way of saying, what kind of, you know, junk did they give you? Red flags. Did they give you pills? Because he was afraid, with multiple years sober, that if a doctor would give me something, he would lose me again. The wounds close, they heal, the scars are there forever. And they don't need to know that. I need to know that. We need to know that. But very often we cannot, forgive me for preaching, this is just something that's been here for a long time, because there's so many young people in here. Guys, I am tired of burying you folks. And some of us, like Arne, have been around a while. Marion, a few others have been around a while. We know there's going to be people in this room we're going to hear about, like Hunter last week, who is here every Monday night, who is here every Thursday night. He's not coming back anymore. He's out of pain, thank the good Lord. He dines with the Lord tonight, but we lost him. And I know what's going to happen. I'll come back next year for a workshop if Mike invites me. He's going to tell me, remember Joe or Mary? We lost them. I'm tired of burying folks like us when we have this in front of us, where we don't have to be tormented and suffer anymore. And what about us who are sponsoring? What kind of message are we passing on? Have we gotten lazy? I mean, sometimes you meet somebody, it just doesn't connect, fine. But they get a sponsor, like Dane did. Our schedules didn't work. He was immediately hooked up with a sponsor in 5 minutes. It wasn't like another 6 months because I can't find someone for me. Got a sponsor. Got into the work. That's a hero. What kind of message are we passing along? 81 years old. June will be 82. AA will be 82 years old in June, if my math is correct. Are we still passing on don't drink and go to meetings after this many years? Is that all we got to offer in Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't drink, go to meetings, put the plug in the jug? After all of this, are we passing on a message from the big book Alcoholics Anonymous and getting people to God, driving people to God? Be the vehicle. Hop on my back. I'll take you to God. We both chop wood. We both carry water. And we find God carries this water in the broken pots, and that's us. And little by slowly puts us back together. So we can get free of this thing that wants me dead, will settle for me, drunk or high. My illness loves when one of us goes out on a run, when we lose one. Die or not, they love, it wins. And you know what it takes with that one addict? The whole family goes. The brothers, the sisters, mom, dad, the cousins, the whole family goes along for the ride. And sometimes we can forget that. Let me never forget, God. The great thing is when we cross over into the world of the Spirit and we start to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and we start to be really diligent with the work, because we get to do the work. We get to go to meetings. We get to put our burdens at God's feet and move on. We get to do a lot of this stuff, that we're not fighting that addiction thing anymore like we did at the beginning. We're not fighting self. It shows up once in a while, but it isn't the task of, I got to get out of my own way. I can't think about this. I'm thinking about it again. I'm behaving inappropriately. I got a secret sex life. I got a secret life here, and I got a secret life there. We're just free, standing raw before our Creator and each other. Transparency. What a great way to live when you have no secrets anymore. God has allowed me to share things from a podium that at one time they wouldn't even be shared with the sponsor. I was uncomfortable. That's transparency. That's not because I'm some super AA guy. Believe me, I'm not. I'm flawed just as much as anyone. But this power is perfect. This power is pristine. This power is consistent and constant. And it's all loving and no opposite, and will give me things, not to make me necessarily comfortable, but someone can identify with those words and perhaps bring them some comfort. Comfort the disturbed and disturb the comforted. That's what we need. Shake it up to wake it up. What's the purpose of a 12-step series? What's the purpose of a speaker meeting? Yeah, we identify with our stories. Got that. Hey, I drank just... Yeah, we got you. In fact, as soon as you say you're alcoholic, I already know you. And vice versa. Then we give testimony. We share our stories. Okay, now what? Okay, we identify. We're both drunks. Me and you were drunks. We got that part. Now, how do we stay here? And what do we do with the new one walking? How do we get him or her to stay here if they're desperate to stay here? What are we offering? Thus, we have 12-step series to talk about the methodology and the experiences of what we went through, how we took this work on, and what it did for us, what it did to us, and how it affected the people who love us, like mom and dad and brother and sisters and the spouse and so on and so forth, how they were directly affected by an awakened spirit. Because if you're around here a while, you will see that God is very contagious. I've watched it happen in my own family. I come from a family, like most families, God's there and we got work to do. And when you get sick or die, you worry about God. Very John Wayne kind of thing. you know, man's got to do what a man's got to do. And when my mom passed, there was me, my two brothers, and my dad. It was like an army barracks. There's no time for feelings right now. There's no time for tears. There's no time for sensitivity. Just man up when you're four and go beat somebody up and get money, you know. God. What? God? We got no time for God. No time for God. There's no time for God and his family. I remember one time we were having a Thanksgiving dinner. My mom wanted to pray, and everyone looked at her like, are you crazy? It's Thanksgiving, but we're not going to pray. And what has happened to that family, because God used me to walk through a mile of garbage to get to the other side, my family's become a godly family. I have two brothers who are very involved in that church. My dad actually said to me over the phone very recently, God bless you. I almost hit a pole driving when he said this. That's become a working part of his lingo now. God bless you. I love you, Dad. I love you too. God bless you. What? Because God's contagious. And what we're all doing is just going home. We're just going home. And when we start to talk about God, it might feel awkward at the beginning, but it begins to feel really natural. How can I not talk about God? How can I not pray publicly? How can I not shout God from the rooftops? How can I possibly deny God? That's what I did at one point. No longer. And I look back at how did I live in this bubble of ignorance growing up and buy in the belief systems that a godly man is a weak man? And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, it's all about God. The whole thing's about God. The entire movement is about God. And if you go into meetings that they're not doing that, you're not really in a good meeting, right? Let's be honest. We go to Don't Drink, Go to Meetings meeting. It's a drunkalogue meeting. It's a war story meeting. It's great, it's there, but what are we offering each other? When we study our history, all they did was get you to God now. May you find him now with a big exclamation. Not in 90 days, not in 6 months, not in a year from now, not when you're ready, right now, while you're bleeding out. Now. Stop the bleeding now. If not, we're going to bury you. I'm so grateful, I'll be honest with you, that the teachers that God put in my path were bulldogs. If anyone knows me, what I do for a living, and to some degree, depending on the sponsee, I can be very much like that because it worked for me. They were bulldogs. They said how to dress at a meeting, and they didn't waver. When you go to a podium, put on a sport jacket. 28 years later, that's what I do. Leave the woman alone. They gave me clear-cut, precise, specific, exact directions, and they barked them at me. They were always barking the old time. They always barked. I don't know why. But they barked. Kid, you do this. Okay, I'm doing it. I'm desperate. I'm doing it. You got 30 years. I'm not arguing with you. I walked into Vince Dowling's office. Bless his heart. He's passed on. One of my first heroes. One of my first eyes. He looked like Dr. Bob. Even had a straw hat on his desk. And he says, come to my office. I was home from Minnesota. So I had, we'll say, an 11-month sober time frame. He's come to my office tomorrow at 3 o'clock. So I hadn't been to New York City. And I'm just walking around taking it. I said, 3, I better get over there. Even if I get there late, no big deal. What's 15 minutes? I walk in at 3:15. I sit down. He says, I didn't tell you to sit. You're 15 minutes late. Come back when you're ready to get sober. And close the door on me. I'm on 17th Street and 6th Avenue. Now I got to go back to Brooklyn for 15 minutes late. Now, in some of our touchy-feely, warm, fuzzy, cozy AA, that would be, oh, my God. What about his feelings? He didn't care about my feelings. He cared about my life. Discipline is freedom. In discipline, there's freedom. In discipline, there's freedom. In discipline, there's freedom. He says, here's a kid with 11 months. I remember when he came in, doing pretty good, but needs a little discipline. You're 15 minutes late. I have a life, too, is what he was telling me. So I went back the next day. I was waiting in the office at 2:45 for him to open the door and say, come on in. I got the message. How do I know in those 15 minutes I don't get hijacked on, you know, 20th Street and 6th Avenue with a deal? How do I know? God wanted me there at 3 o'clock. I walk in like Mr. Big Shot 3:15. What's the problem? Huge problem. I'm not disciplined. And maybe that appointment wasn't that important to me. So So how are we doing with the strict spiritual disciplines of steps 10 and 11 if we're there, if we're growing in understanding and effectiveness? How are we doing with that? What's that currently look like? Do I have a prayer life? Do I have a life of meditation? Have I backed away from a prayer life and a life of meditation? Is it something I used to do when I was new, but I'm cured now, so I don't have to? Do I have a sponsor? Am I accountable to folks? And if I'm making you uncomfortable, well, that's not my intent. Well, yeah, it is, actually. Okay. Last week, we talked about what we do in a day. It says when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. It's not about dragging myself through coals. It's constructively looking at my day, like, how can I build on this? Like, if you have a company, you have a staff meeting, you know, you go over things that are working, things that aren't working. How can we build up these weak spots in the company? How can we help the staff get better? How can we help, you know, the clients get better? Where are we missing the mark? Where was the arm got a couple of cracks in it? So we're going to constructively review our day. And then here comes inventory again. We have inventory in 4. They ask us questions in 10. More inventory. They ask us questions in 11. More inventory. 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 When we have a life of inventory, freedom is a byproduct of it. When we don't have a life of inventory, bondage is a byproduct of that. Inventory is vital. It's blood to us when we're doing inventory. Constant vigilance, taking a look at where I missed the mark. And some days are going to be, wow, I really missed the mark a lot today. Other days is going to be maybe not that bad. But in doing, we succeed. And in discipline, there's freedom. So I do inventory at night. Have I missed over 28 years? Absolutely. And one of my teachers said, then do it in the morning. There's been times I was sharing with Ronnie the other day. I was working in Texas. And I'm not lying to you. 80, 90-hour work weeks. I was working alone. They threw me to the dogs down there. And I was building this company. And a couple of times I would work till like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning somewhere. I'm not lying to you. And I remember going back to my bunk after having a little dinner, and I had a sport jacket, I had a dress, I was dressed like I am tonight, and I was just so exhausted. You know when you just put your head on a pillow for like 5 minutes? I woke up the next morning, clothes on and all, in the same position. When I was coming around out of this fog, I sat down about a half hour later, and I wrote down how angry I was at my bosses for allowing me to work this long. So I had some inventory to write. So I haven't missed much. Thank the good Lord I've been disciplined to the spiritual life. Are we disciplined to a spiritual life? Or do we discern when I should write and when I shouldn't write? It says, have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Sounds like the fourth step. Was I kind and loving toward all? Then it says, what could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Most alcoholics, we are thinking of ourselves most of the time. Even when I'm, you know, feeding a homeless, I'm hoping some AA walks by and says, wow, he's really a great AA guy. Don't I look good for this? Or we do a good deed and we tell the entire planet. I'm thinking of myself. Do you ever, when somebody's talking to you, you're getting panicky because you're trying to think of some pearl of wisdom to lay on their lap? Instead of just listening, I'm thinking of myself most of the time. This is how I operate. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others or what we could pack into the stream of life? Now my book says, be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Why? Because it diminished my usefulness to others. It's about being of service to others. So if once again I'm consumed as the ego comes through the back door, I can't believe I did this, oh my God. You know, after 2 or 3 days of doing that, it's all about the ego. And I'm thinking of me again. And I'm in this place of remorse and morbid reflection. How could I possibly be a effective for the guy sitting in front of me when I'm still consumed with me, which means my ego is flourishing again. Harry Thiebaud wrote about the reemergence of the ego, the reconstruction of the ego that will happen to us after some point. whether we like it or not. The ego will start to stretch out a little bit, start to get comfortable in my meetings. People start to know me. I've had a spiritual awakening. Things are going pretty good right now. And maybe that fire that was on me when I got in here June of 88 has kind of waned a little bit. I've gotten a little bit comfortable. And I start to cut back on meditation. I start to cut back on prayer. I check in with God now. And the clothes I'm wearing is more important than God. The jewelry I have is more important than God. I start to worship two masters and a house divided against itself can't stand. The jewelry, the hair, the this and that is important, great, but more important than God? Inventory is gone. Discussion, accountability with someone is gone. Amends list is still where it is. I made a little dent, but I didn't complete my amends list. Defects of character are starting to flourish again. They're starting to show up, and I minimize and justify and rationalize them away. But people are being affected and infected by them. And I have a sponsor in name only. Why turn my will over? I know what I'm doing. Insane thoughts are coming back. I'm God. I can control this. I'm into a place of self-reliance. I'm cutting away from meetings like this, and I'm just dipping into a meeting right after work just to get it out of the way. I just go to a meeting. Nobody knows. I just get out of here. Monday Night Football's on. You know. Sponsee calls. I'm not here. It's 6 o'clock at night. How tired could you be? And then I'm drunk. And I just went backwards through the steps. The way I do my inventory, we have these questions, and we can answer the questions as they are. I was just brought up a little bit different influence. And I've always done four-column inventory all the time. Where is I resentful today? I'll write fear inventory. Why am I fearful? I'm selflessly trying to control and manage this fear by what I'm doing in the face of fear. And then I write down, I'm not trusting or relying upon God to care and protect me. Done. That took 1 minute. I got it on paper. Now it means a phone call. I call up my sponsor or one of the immediately folks. Say, listen, something hooked me today. You have 10 minutes for me. Here's my fear. Here's my resentment. I get some information from them. They see a little bit different. I hit the mat, pray, go to bed. I'm done. I'm clean. And maybe I need to make an amends, then take care of it. We're clean. We're clear. We put the day to bed. I'm not waking up, as the 12 and 12 says, like Tuesday morning with Monday hangover, emotional hangover, because I still got the baggage of all the stuff I went. And we forget. Oh, boy, do we forget. I forget. We all forget. We got this omnipotent power called God, this forgiving God that as soon as I steal, I'm already forgiven. But I won't go back to him and say, Father, forgive me for my trespasses. I screwed up a little bit today. Sin, I missed the mark. I meant to be sweet, and I was a little rough. I shouldn't have hung out where I was, and I did. I didn't go to church service, or I missed my whatever it might be. I had bad feelings. I had feelings of jealousy towards someone today for their success. Where that came from, I don't know. And I was really, really vengeful in my heart about this. Forgive me. Done. And without breaking it, I want to be careful about a tradition. For me personally, my God went to the cross for my screw-ups. But I won't do a little inventory and say, can you forgive me? Show me what to do. What are my corrective measures here, God? How do I fix this? And if I don't know, the sponsor will say, here's what you need to do, Pete. Call up Joe, just make an amends for this. Or just show up at that group. Or next time you see the homeless person, give them some bucks. Whatever it might be. Or just be still next time you're in this group of folks. Say nothing. Just be the best copy of this big book you can be. You may be the only one they ever read. Simple stuff. It says, after making my review, I asked God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. When I was newly sober, what my sponsor had me do was write down this little column of corrective measures. Again, it was a little spiritual tool, so I can get a visual on what would this look like, where I fell short, what would the opposite look like. You know, if I was angry today, what would love look like? If I was jealous today, maybe trusting. And so on and so forth. And I got to see these things, and I got to see how I operate. And I'll share a quick story with you. I started doing this nightly review with my sponsor before I even got into inventory. My first sponsor is, we're going to start doing nightly reviews now. I said, everyone else says you have to wait. He says, we're going to start now. And I start doing these nightly reviews. And I was working on the docks, the Brooklyn docks. I was a longshoreman, not the training ground for spiritual growth. It was a little rough. Guys were fed up with the day at like 6 a.m. in the morning. And there I am with my big book and my Joe and Charlie tapes. I had the big boom boxes, if anybody remember those, with the cassette tapes. I would listen to Joe and Charlie all day long with the big one. I said, again with these? What is this thing you're listening to? How many times they would tell me, can you possibly read one book? So I quickly became aware of the amount of gossip and character assassination and backstabbing that was going on that I was deaf, dumb, and blind to in my environment. If three of us were hanging out having coffee, sooner one of us left, we destroyed you. And then when you came back in, hey, how's it going? How's everything? This is how it was. Money was God. Overtime was God. And I said, there's something wrong with this way of living. I don't know what to do with that. I was writing inventory, and fell prey to that a few times. And what my sponsor had me do is, I'm going to show you a little trick, how God actually works. You're going to see it in black and white. He said, I want you to write down some things you're going to surrender to God. Anger, resentment, whatever it might be. He's put the date on top of the paper. And you just keep praying for that. And let's pretend it was January 1st. About a month or so went by, and this stuff was going on again. And I found myself experienced what the 10-step talks about. Cease fighting anything or anyone. I was placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I was very much aware of what was going on, but I wasn't drawn to it. I wasn't angry about it. I wasn't apathetic. I was just aware, and I was in this place. But for the grace of God is what I thought. And what prayer, meditation, what this work will do is not remove the controversy. That's not, the drug dealers aren't going anywhere. The bars aren't closing down. The liquor stores aren't closing down. There's too much money involved in that. They're never closing down. The world affairs, the craziness, the calamity that's out there, that's happening. It's been going on since Cain and Abel. It ain't going anywhere. It's there. So when I pray and meditate and I get some spiritual muscles, it doesn't mean I have the power to remove all of that. It just means in the middle of all of that, I'm still and I'm okay. While stuff is going around me that isn't good, and what that allows us to do is to be that much more effective and helpful in those places of destruction. Like when we're spiritually fit, we're more affected to the sick and suffering drunk. When there's stuff going on around us, like someone's getting beat up, instead of getting our cell phone like you see on social media and they film the whole thing, we call 911. We're part of the solution. We'll get in the middle of it. If we see a little child running on the street who's abandoned, when we're effective and awake, it doesn't eliminate this abandoned child, but we're able to go over there and maybe call 911 and be part of the solution. What would God want me to do? And I start living what I do to the least of them, I do to him, rather than hooray for me and the heck with you. That's the great thing. I've heard people say, well, you guys in AA, you pray and meditate to escape reality. And my comeback is, no, we're experiencing the only reality that really is. God, silence, stillness. It's where we came from. It's where I return to. What am I doing in the middle of it? My sponsor asked me a question one time, what are you doing about the dash? It was like 6 o'clock in the morning. I have no idea what this dash is. I says, Mark, what's this dash? What do you mean? What am I doing about the dash? He's, money, what are you doing about the dash? And he kept at me. I said, I don't know. I don't know what this means. He's, when you go to a cemetery, there's a headstone. And on the headstone, it has the person's name, and there's a date that God brought them here. And there's another date that God took them home. And in the middle of that is a 2-inch dash. That's their life. That's your life. He says, money, what are you doing about the dash? Squandering the hours that may have been worthwhile with resentments and fears and God knows what. Fill in the blank. Because we turn around and the time's up. And it's no time to go back through the work again. And without being morbid, from the time we're born, when we pop out of mama, that's our birthday, right? Joe was born, Mary was born on such and such a date, mama gave birth. Great, everyone's happy. At that moment, soon as we come out and the doctor slaps us on the butt, we take our first breath. At that moment, we are already running out of time. Think about that. We're running out of time. As soon as we come out of Mama, already running, we're on the clock. I always say the 60-minute show, tick, 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 tick. We're running out of time. Now, I got 15 treatment centers. I've become institutionalized. All I know is treatment in jail. That's all I do. Go to AA, won't do the steps, won't find God, still running the show my way, tick, 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 tick. I think I'm invincible. I won't OD and die. I won't get drunk and hit a telephone pole. Or I just linger. Orin's been around forever. How many people we know just lingering, waiting for the miracle to happen? Clock is ticking. What am I doing about this precious gift of sobriety, precious gift of life that God breathes breath into me every day? I didn't plug into a battery this morning. God says, wake up. And the breath that I'm breathing, think of this, is actually our God breathing through us and for us. That's how close we are to this God. It's His breath breathing through us. We didn't plug into a computer, download an app that says breathe. We're just breathing. Heart's still beating. And how many bullets have we dodged, figuratively speaking, and sometimes literally, to be here? And we have 12 steps that gets us free of all this stuff. It's like kissing a newborn on the cheek. You ever hold a newborn? They got that baby smell, that thing. You just get goofy and you just want to hold them. That's what recovery is like compared to the nonsense and the misery and the humiliation, degradation every single day, and it's not going anywhere, that I did to keep a drunk going. My book tells me that we alcoholics are undisciplined. That's an understatement. So we let God discipline us in a simple way we've just outlined. Faith without works is dead. That's taken from another book. So it's one thing to have beliefs, spiritual beliefs. It's another to live them. It's two different area codes. I can believe in God, but I don't really have a relationship with God. I can have spiritual beliefs, I can believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not actually living it. And if you want to know what I'm doing, just take a look at my actions. And what am I supposed to do with all of this? Now that God's awakened me and I'm part of this wonderful, glorious fellowship, what am I supposed to do with it? AA says, give the entire thing away to some drunk who doesn't look good, doesn't sound good, doesn't smell good, is drunk and disorderly. Give this prized possession, this beautiful gift that's glossy and clean and pristine, give it to them. That's what we're supposed to do. If I want to keep what I have, if I want to continue to get my soul food, give the entire thing away. Take a 12-step series. Pour out your blood. Sponsored a new guy, walked them through a dark, lonely night like they did with me, and hold their hand. And when someone's in a place called Dark Night of the Soul, and if you only know that if you have it, there's this place where you just can't connect anymore. You're sober, you're doing all of the, you're chopping wood and carrying water, you just can't connect. It's awfully painful. It's a tremendous amount of pruning that the Lord is doing. And all we have to do to those folks is just hold them while they scream on a dark night. That's all we need to do. Just know my buds are here. I got tough stuff going on. I don't know what's going on, but my AAs are right here. And as AA members, the fellowship of the Spirit and the Spirit within the fellowship is there. We never have to walk alone. And yet we choose to go walk alone. That's the great thing, why this whole thing is like ordained for us. Who else is going to take us in? We're in the grip of the grapes. Us. Family don't want us. Cops, you know what they do. Treatment centers, what's your insurance? How much money you got? We, come on in. I will buy you a cup of coffee. I will take you to the diner. I will get you clothes. And I will hold you while you cry through the night. And I'll be here in the morning to take you to me. That's my Alcoholics Anonymous. That's godly living, by the way. Sometimes we think godly living, we have to stand on a mountain and part the seas or stop the wind from blowing. It's nursing a drunk through a dark night. You want to talk about practicing principles in all our affairs? That's it. And then we go home to the families who still smart from our injustice to them, who are still banged up because of our alcoholism, even though we've made amends, and they still have these glaring defects, and I'm not critiquing them anymore. I'm understanding them. I'm just there. and taking ownership for some of the nonsense they still do, that I participate in this, I perhaps even cause this. That's spiritual muscles. And getting away from the self-pity, and why is God giving me these trials of Job? It's all part of a pruning, and I walk in gratitude. I walk in confidence with God, even when it's up against us and we're wondering, why is this going on? Because we're going to get, the earth's going to shake a little bit. The carpenter had moments of doubt and skepticism at one point. You know I am. And so it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried. We tried. We do the best we can. No one's Superman in AA. We're all broken, we're all flawed, but we try. We take the message to a drunk. Hopefully they take it. If not, we go on to the next one. We try to carry this message. No one has the message, the perfect message. It's influence. It's who's doing the disciplines that can bring a message. Some can articulate it well, some can't. But how am I doing with the drunk sitting at my table? Am I passionate about my AA? Am I excited about my AA? Because the drunk is going to read that. I remember Mark called me up one time and said, how you doing, Money? I said, I'm hanging in there. And he read me the Riot Act for the next 3 days about saying, I'm hanging in there. Hanging in there. You're alive, sober, above ground, sucking air. You're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You've got the glory of God. You're hanging in there. I never said, I'm hanging in there again. We try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all my affairs. And by now, I have more principles than I do affairs. And we'll talk about that next week. That's all I got. Peace.
Can we thank the speaker one more time? Now, Fred with the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Chad to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Chad, alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Can you guys stand, please? Everyone who is available for sponsorship, can we please meet them up front after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. And the Big Book study itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's sessions and all sessions online for free at Alcoholics and God. .org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study, where we really go into depth and really get a further understanding of what everything means. Anyone who wishes to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
can't get it right. zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you laughing, bah, 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 when you laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through, but when you crying, bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, of people going by, I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying, and watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. What a wonderful world. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.